TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Well, we have two corrections to start off with on the show, of course. The first of which is this is not an encore presentation. That'll be heard later in the day.
We're live.
The second, exactly, we're live. Second of which is that Drew Mandel is not in attendance. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and Tim Debenham. Boys, first of all, we can already say that Drew is not missed. We'll be talking about him later in the show. But let's discuss a couple of things. And first off, how's the summer going, Ezzy?
It's going well, and yeah, we'll mention Drew Ritchie. But
you had a week off last week.
Had a week off.
We haven't gone dark in a couple of years, really. Like, what did you do with the free time?
Yeah, I mean, I to be honest with you, I actually spent some time moving into my new house, and it was very lovely. I cut the grass, did some painting. I've actually been to Home Depot and. I think now four times in the last 2 weeks or something like that. But yeah, the last time that we didn't have a show, because remember all of last year we had all of the Jets news in the summer.
Right.
I think we were guessing it was maybe 2 years ago. So it was nice to have a week off, but it's also nice to be back. It feels a little bit weird not being on the air Saturdays. So I'm definitely loving the fact that we're back.
Remo, you're sitting in my chair. Well, usually my chair.
Feels good. Comfortable chair.
Good chair. You have use of a computer today?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm reading on some of these latest CBA articles.
And that's where we're going to start. We're going to start with the CBA articles. But first, CBA articles. We're going to talk about the CBA. Obviously, news has come about this week. And in reality, the biggest story from here on out until the season starts, whenever that may be, is going to be the CBA negotiations between the National Hockey League and the National Hockey League Players Association. Quickly, I want to talk about the guests we're going to have on today. And today's going to be a really good show. We have Frank Provenzano. He's the assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. He's going to give us an interesting perspective, what it's like to be an assistant GM, the responsibilities he has, you know, where the game is going. And, of course, we're going to talk about the Dallas Stars and their busy offseason. I mean, they added Ray Whitney. They added Jaromir Jagr. They traded for Derek Roy. They traded Ribeiro and got Winnipegger Cody Eakin. Dallas, it's an interesting offseason. And we're going to talk about the marketplace he's competing in. You're competing against the Cowboys and the Rangers and the Mavericks. So that should be an interesting interview. That'll be his first appearance on the show. At the top of the hour, 10 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey, former assistant GM of the Minnesota Wild. He is in the Czech Republic for the Ivan Hlinka tournament. This is like the big pre-draft tournament, really. People's stock, and we're going to ask him about this, but player stock really does change. Some players sucked, as at least, and based upon their performance here. And you get a good gauge of how these young players can compete against other players of their similar talent level, you know, on the international scene. And at 10:30, we're going to be speaking to Corey Prodman of Hockey Prospectus. He's the prospect expert at Hockey Prospectus, does work for ESPN. He came out 2 days ago, excuse me, with his top 10 Jets prospects in the system. We're going to ask him about each and every one of those prospects and maybe one or two prospects outside the top 10 who he can foresee, you know, some significant performance down the line. So it's going to be an interesting show, a little bit diverse, and we're looking forward to it. But first, we want to start with the CBA. And I think when we talk about the CBA, first and foremost, I guess the conversation now starts with Gary Bettman's proclamation that if there's no hockey on September 15th, there will be a lockout.
Absolutely, and I think it was the most expected proclamation since maybe 2004, 2005. It hasn't been a surprise that September 15th is the deadline that everyone has their eye on. And obviously, Gary Bettman on Thursday came out with that and you know, it basically created a media storm, which it shouldn't have, because we know that CBA negotiations are ongoing and have been for a few weeks now, some serious negotiations. And we know that the NHLPA is coming back with their counter proposal, which obviously is in response to the NHL's initial proposal, which everyone knows is just a starting point.
Yeah.
But the serious negotiations are really, you could argue, haven't started, but I guess the groundwork has started. And, you know, I think I tweeted this yesterday. I mean, the amount of conjecture out there is unbelievable. You know, you're seeing player agents and you're seeing players tweeting about which side are you going to be on. And the reality is, I think people have to be cautious because, you know, hockey fans are starting to talk about, you know, we might miss half of a season, we might miss a month, we might miss 2 months. The reality is, this is very different than 2004. The issues at play are different. You know, I personally don't know if there will or won't be a lockout or how long it'll be. I honestly haven't formed my opinion yet. I think a lockout is likely. But I definitely don't think that anyone at this point can say how long they think the lockout is when the stakes are completely different. We're talking about a set of different issues, very serious issues, but issues that I don't think missing half of a season are worth. So
I agree. And I think you're right. I want to point out one quick thing. If you recall back in 04, 05, or 04 really, when the lockout started, the issue, not so much the issue, but obviously the salary cap was a big thing. But if you remember, the NHL and NHLPA teamed together to host the World Cup, which I wrote about actually on the site, Overtime, in terms of, and that's a moneymaker for both of them. So that was a little bit overshadowing. You know, people thought there'd be a lockout, but they were used to the lockout from 94, you know, or 95, the half season that they lost. Now, nobody ever thought they'd miss a whole season. But also, fans could look forward to the World Cup. Like right now, if say if there was a World Cup this year and it would finish right before September 15th, fans would have something to look forward to. This season, they don't. They have nothing to look forward to. The only thing to talk about is the CBA. And I think there's a lot of conjecture on both sides, but I personally don't think it's going to last too long. But at the same time, I mean, you have David Schultz coming out this week in the Globe, Michael, say, hey, I mean, I don't think the season starts before January 1st. And the reason he says January 1st is because he thinks the NHL and Players Association will buckle because of the importance of the Winter Classic.
You know, when they come out with the CBA, you know, articles, my first response is, please wake me up when they come to agreement. There's, you know, $3.1 billion of revenue. And if these guys can't figure out how to split up this pie, I think something's wrong.
Well, we were talking about it last night. You look at the Canadian owners, you know. Well, if you're going to pick a side, players versus owners, and I think last time the owners were the ones who people kind of picked that side. I think it's moving towards the players. You look at the owners, you know, crying poor, quote-unquote. You look at Vancouver. Vancouver's owner, multimillionaire. He was going through his own things in terms of his personal life, but multimillionaire. You're looking at Edmonton, Daryl Cates. He's a billionaire.
Rexall.
And you're looking at Calgary, millions and a bunch of guys on that ownership, millionaire. You look at Winnipeg. You know, Mark Chipman's a millionaire. David Thompson's a billionaire. You look at Toronto, going to now be co-owned by Bell and Rogers, billion-dollar corporations. You look at Ottawa, Eugene Melnick, billionaire. You look at Montreal, the Molsons. I mean, how much do they have? Hundreds of millions of dollars. So, I mean, I'm not going to cry poor for the owners here. How much are they really even losing? Say the guy loses a couple million dollars a year. Within his business, does he actually lose that? And secondly, when he sells the team, he generally makes it back anyways. So if I have to pick a side in this fight, I'm leaning more towards the players.
Right, and if an NHL owner is worried about losing a couple million dollars, he shouldn't be an NHL owner, really. But this whole idea that you have to pick a side in this day and age, and we saw it, you know, this past summer with the NFL, and there have been issues in the NBA, but this idea that you have to pick a side, are you on the player's side or on the owner's side? The reality is, and this is based on the fact that we've already had two lockouts. I think people are I think more fed up with this than this impending CBA lockout than the last one in 2004. I think that people are fed up with this, and I think Remus is right. I think people are looking at what's going on, and they're reading it and following it on television, and they're thinking, you know, when is this going to be over? Because this is all we've been through this song and dance before in 2004 with all of this, and everyone back then expected it. Remember, for 2 years we knew that there had to be cost certainty and a salary cap in the NHL. This time around, it's the question of revenue sharing.
Hold on, he got that. Gary Bettman got that.
Right,
and now he still wants the players to take more of the brunt.
I would say last time the lockout seemed almost reasonable. And I think with the NFL's lockout during the past season, you knew that they were going to come to agreement just because there was way too much money.
That's right.
You know, since the last one, salaries have escalated, you know, revenue has escalated, and the worth of teams have escalated. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when this lockout, I'm going to take the side of – I would take the side of the players because they did give up a lot last time. Mm-hmm. And they did, you know, quote-unquote fix – the system. And now you look at, you know, a player like Henrik Lundqvist, who's tweeting yesterday, the NHL says they won't play past September 15th under the current deal. Apparently, they don't like the deal they designed.
And then that's true, and I want to talk about that quickly. But the thing about, you know, not playing past September 15th, they have no obligation to. I mean, a contract they have in place terminates September 15th.
Right.
Now, a contract, Michael, probably more on their terms than on the players' terms. The truth is they have no obligation. So when Donald Fehr says, just so people understand this, and I think most do, when Donald Fehr says, oh, I'll play, we'll play under the old system, well, of course they will. Because what happens
they
is...
they like the old system.
Not only that, they like it better than what they're going to get, but also, well, not only that, Donald Fehr did this in baseball. You play, and then the players suddenly get all the leverage. Because this is what happens. They have the ability to strike if they play under the old system.
Right.
So we get into January, and for example, the Winnipeg Jets are on a tear, and they're first in the Eastern Conference. And Minnesota ends up tanking. And somebody else ends up tanking. And Tampa Bay ends up tanking. And Donald Fehr says, you know, the players are gonna threatening to strike. And the owners start infighting. The Winnipeg Jets say, hey, we want to play. We want to make this, get this done. We have a shot, like the Montreal Expos. Other owners are like, well, we don't care. Our team's not going to make much in attendance. That's fine. I don't care. And that's what happens. He puts the pressure on the owners. So the owners are not going to give leverage. That is giving leverage to the players. So that's not going to happen. And I don't blame Bettman for that. But at the same time, I blame Bettman for the overall... like, first of all, last time was to push out Goodenow. He pushed out Goodenow. I know he works for the 30 owners, but his job is also to better the game and take care of the fans, to me, in a sense. And if another lockout, another prolonged lockout takes place here, Gary Bettman will once again prove that he's incapable of being a competent commissioner, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and at this point, Gary Bettman's been... the commissioner of the NHL, it's hard to believe now, for essentially two decades.
Yeah.
And if there's a third lockout, okay, fine. I mean, you know, some people think, okay, well, how could he still have his job, three lockouts or whatever? Well, the revenues are up, and Gary Bettman has the full support of the 29 general managers. Obviously, there's only 29
because yeah.
Phoenix is owned
yeah.
by the, pardon me, owners.
Yeah.
And Gary Bettman has the ability to keep them all on the same page, and it's well-documented. Gary Bettman is extremely powerful in that room when he gets together. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, nobody questions his leadership. So if there's another lockout, that it's quite possible Gary Bettman's still commissioner of the NHL for 5 to 10 years. That doesn't mean anything. I mean, when you think about what's at stake here, you know, there's cost certainty in the NHL. There's 30 teams. You know, the NHL's come back to Winnipeg. There's a strong possibility the NHL will come back to Quebec City. There's a strong possibility we could get an eighth Canadian team even. But the reality is, it's 43%. The gap between 43% and 57% of hockey-related revenue, is it going to be 50 or 52? That's basically what it comes down to. It's splitting up that pie.
There's really only two significant issues to me, and I think at the end of the day, what you're going to see is the 52 to 53% revenue split, and you're going to see more revenue sharing, and we're going to get games back, hopefully in time for the beginning of October. But if not, maybe a couple weeks in. I don't think it lasts any longer than that. First segment down. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Live on TSN 1290. Quarter after the hour, filling in for Drew Mandel. I'm Richard Pollack, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and Tim Debenham. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done.
I have to say, Richie, not only are you filling in for Drew, you're doing a better job than Drew does.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
That was a good read.
Yeah.
Oh, you like that read?
Yeah, Carbone.
Yeah.
Coal-fired pizza.
Coal-fired pizza.
When Drew comes back, he might not have a job.
But he will have a pizza.
Yeah. We'll bring him a pizza. Like, we'll buy him the pizza just to as kind of like a parting gift.
Yeah, we'll give him the pizza. Yeah.
Like, we're not just gonna let him go and not give him a pizza. Yeah. We'll make sure he gets a Carbone pizza.
You get a Carbone pizza and then fire him. Yeah.
So that's what you do, right? You
maybe a coal fired Drew.
Yeah. You butter him up. Yeah. Coal fired Drew.
Boys, this week actually an interesting occurrence, I guess you'd say. An interesting signing, more appropriately. Jeff Skinner.
Yep.
a player who we've talked about in the show many times, a very talented player, really good stick handler, good vision. You can get a shot off. He's a really talented young player. You know, some thought that Carolina reached a little bit, pick him a couple years ago, seventh overall. That clearly proved to not be the case. And Jeff Skinner's only played 2 years in the National Hockey League, and just this week he signed a six-year extension, which will pay him $5.725 million after this season. Now, understand this, that an entry-level contract like his, when started at 18, he has 3 years he has to play out, and then his contract that he recently signed kicked in. So if you follow me, he's making a 1.4 cap hit next year, and then after that, his new contract kicks in, $5.725 per year for six seasons. My question to you guys is, well, I guess first simply, is it an overpay? And then we'll get into the ramifications of the deal.
Okay, I'll start off here. And you know, I don't think it is an overpay, because I think Jeff Skinner is one of the best young forwards in the NHL. I think, for me, the issue is that why did they sign him with 1 year left on his entry-level contract, and then they signed him for 6 years, and now he can become an unrestricted free agent. And Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News wrote about that. We had him on 3 weeks ago, and he was questioning that because, as we know, Jamie Benn is a free agent, and they have to sign him. And now they're worried that because Jeff Skinner signed this contract, how is that going to increase the value of Jamie Benn? But back to just that issue, I mean, Jeff Skinner, you know, we saw him a lot here in Winnipeg last year, and obviously he had a sensational rookie year. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, $5.75 million a year for Jeff Skinner, that seems about right at his age, I guess. It might be a little bit high in that sense. It might be an overpay, but, I mean, you want to lock the guy up.
Let me read you his stats before I throw it to Remus.
Sure.
Okay? 82 games in his rookie year. He had 31 goals, 32 assists, and he had 63 points. In his second season, last season, in 64 games, he had 44 points.
Yeah, it was a drop-off.
I like Jeff Skinner.
Yeah.
Just as much as the next guy, if not more. But that's an overpay. And that, again, proves to me that the general managers do not know how to utilize the system to the best of their advantage. And because of that, they're coming back to the players to ask him to take bigger hits. Michael?
Well, I think it's a bit of a slight overpay, but I do like the move locking up a young guy. But I think usually, and you see this a lot in baseball, you know, with the Rays, what they do is, you know, you lock up a younger guy at a team-friendly deal for long-term. I'd say this is a fair deal, but I don't think it's a team-friendly deal where they're saving, you know, money from locking him up.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, like, take a look at it. Take a step back and say, okay, you have Jeff Skinner here. He plays this year under $2 million, an entry-level deal. You have him for 4 years guaranteed.
Right.
Next summer, you have Jeff Skinner negotiating a deal. He has no arbitration rights, presuming that we're going to assume under these circumstances that the CBA won't change that. Right now, he's got no arbitration rights. So similar to what you're dealing with Evander Kane right now, which we'll talk about in a second. He's got no leverage. Will he sit out? Will he ever make the money back that he would lose if he sat out? Probably not. So you have leverage, and then you give the guy 5.725 per year. Now understand this also. Let him prove himself another year. I mean, he had a great rookie year, and he had a good year last year. But 44 points in 64 games doesn't exactly say he's going to be a superstar. And $5.725 million for me is, you know, he might be worth that deal in 3 to 4 years. But why give him that deal for next year?
Absolutely.
That's the question to you.
Yep. And
you know what? This is my other point. If he has this huge year next year, if he gets 75 points as a third-year player, he probably still would have got 5.725 a year. So why not take another year to take a look? I personally, it's not the worst deal of all time, but again, I just don't think Jim Rutherford here is using the leverage that he has.
Let's be honest, though. As far as Jimmy Rutherford goes, he's just trigger-happy right now. He signed Jordan Staal. Mm-hmm. He signed Alexander Semin. He might just be in that type of mood. He just wants to lock everybody up. But I agree. I mean, you know, you mentioned Richie, you know, 44 points, and he took a step back. And I really like Jeff Skinner. I know that you do too, and I know that Remus does as well. And the talent is unquestionable. Now, whether he'll you know, turn out to be a superstar, you know, I mean, the word superstar is depends how you want to, you know, describe that or define that.
Yeah.
Sorry. But I think Jeff Skinner is let's say he's a 1A prospect. He'd be the Jets' best player, maybe aside from Evander Kane. He'd be our best center. Jeff Skinner, the question is, did you not want to wait because you wanted just to maybe resolve that now? But there was no urgency. So in that sense, when you see the contract, you're wondering why they didn't just wait. There's no reason, but they're making a commitment, and you know, it's a lot of money. But I don't have any worries about that. The cap hit might be a little bit high, but I have no worries that Jeff Skinner is going to be a fantastic hockey player for the duration of that contract and beyond. Because I think he is that good.
There are worse deals. I'm just saying, using the system to your advantage. Now, you can see the way they structured it, Michael. You know, Eric Staal makes 8.25 a year, Jordan Staal 6, and Skinner 5.725. This is all in the season following the one coming up, and then Tuomas Rantanen to 4.75. So you see the structure. Eric's number one, Jordan's number two, Skinner's number three, Rantanen's number four. And I like the way he did that. But at the same time, I think just you could be a little more patient here.
Look, I think when you're negotiating and when you're running a team, a lot of it is about, you know, building relationships, you know, with the general manager and with the players. And I think a lot of it is, you know, we're showing you a commitment. Right. We want you to be a part of this team. Right. We're showing that we want to win. And maybe it'll attract.
Jeff Skinner said, let me just interrupt there. Jeff Skinner said, I didn't expect to negotiate a deal this offseason. He's like, it came about really quickly, but I'm surprised we even got into it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I think Jeff Skinner is a good player.
But I think what your point is also you're managing egos too. And so you're getting everybody into the system and you're getting everybody to buy in. And I agree. I mean, there is some, I guess, value there that's hard to quantify.
Well, I think that part of the value for Skinner and the team is they don't have to go into every, you know, second offseason being, oh, yeah, RFA, you know, maybe do arbitration. We're going to have to go to the bargaining table. I think it kind of takes that out of his mind for the next few years, and he can just, you know, relax and play. But sometimes, you know, players feel maybe an added pressure to live up to such a contract.
That's true. Now, for him, he's not even making that contract next year, so it'll be interesting to see if he feels the pressure early or doesn't feel it till the year after. In any event, this team in Carolina has obviously gotten a lot better, and Jets fans have to be worried. And on the Jets, Evander Kane obviously still has not yet signed. And with Evander Kane not signing, you have to think that this contract will have a bearing on his negotiations.
Craig Oster must have absolutely loved this contract.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, all agents, this is a fantastic contract for Jeff Skinner.
That's right.
Becomes a UFA, and, you know,
They're buying out two UFA years. That's it.
Two UFA years. And obviously, you know, you're right. A lot can happen in a year, and then obviously a lot can happen in the 5 years after that. But, you know, you have to think that Carolina is obviously not going to want to be in a position where they lose him. But, I mean, Evander Kane, we've talked about this a lot. He's going to sign a minimum of 2 years, and it's probably going to be in between 2 and 4 years. And, you know, he's going to get in the four to four and a half a year range. But,
well, let me ask you this, guys.
Similar player with one more year in the NHL, and he just had his career year. As opposed, your point is well taken, though, in the sense that Jeff Skinner did have a sophomore slump. He started off slow, as did Eric Staal and the entire Hurricanes team. That's why Jim Rutherford made all of these moves.
Yeah.
And he was injured, you're right, Richie. He missed some games. But it's interesting that just wait to see what he does, because Evander Kane had lengthy slumps last year. He went on some tears, but he went through 10 or 11 games where he did nothing last year.
Sure.
So if Evander Kane, you know, ends up getting 20 goals and 40 points, I think Evander Kane's not getting as much money. I mean, Evander Kane with 30 goals and 57 points in it as a 20-year-old has shown that, yeah, show me $4 or $5 million, I'm worth it.
Well, look at all this. Go ahead, Michael.
Look at their average points per game. Here's Skinner in year one. We got 0.77, and then as an 18-year-old, and then as a 19-year-old, year two, 0.69 points per game. But if you look at Evander Kane, he's trending, you know, straight
upwards.
Right. His first year, 18-year-old, 0.39 points per game. Second year, 19-year-old, 0.59, and last year as a 20-year-old, 0.77 points per game. So he's, you know, primed for an exploding year, while Skinner had his good year and then is moving down.
So why not be patient? You let the entry-level deal go forward and then see what you got after that. It's another year of evaluating. And if you have a year of evaluating, why lock in before that year is done? One final question before we break, because Frank Provenzano, assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars, will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. This is my question. John Tavares, Jeff Skinner, who's the better player?
I don't think it's a question.
So the answer
I think John Tavares is top five in the NHL.
So if
right
you're
now.
Jimmy Rutherford, then why do you give Jeff Skinner more money than John Tavares over a same six-year term?
You can't really answer that without, you know, leading to more questions. I mean, John Tavares is clearly better. They gave Jeff Skinner. I mean, I'll concede this one, guys. I mean, you guys both say overpay. So, I mean, I guess 2 out of 3 wins, right? Could be an overpay.
You know, I think we could talk about this all day. And the truth is, I think it's a bit of an overpay. I mean, you don't get me wrong. You still could do worse. We got a little Bruce here, so I just want to let this fly for a bit. But you could do a little bit worse. But I think Rutherford overplayed his hand a bit, and it won't cost them big time. But I think it cost them a little bit. And in the big scheme of things, I guess we'll see what comes up there. 2 segments down, on the other side of the break, Frank Provenzano, Assistant General Manager of the Dallas Stars. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
All right.
Bottom of the hour on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel. I'm Richard Pollock, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and producer Tim Debenham. We're joined on the line now by Frank Provenzano, Assistant General Manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, no problem, guys.
Frank, you know, before we get into the Dallas Stars, obviously it's been a busy offseason for you guys in Dallas. Some of our listeners and people like online have kind of wondered exactly what an assistant general manager's day-to-day responsibilities are. We know that, obviously, with the advent of the salary cap, you know, your role and the role you've played in different organizations before has, I guess, changed fairly significantly. Can you maybe give our listeners a little bit of a background on what, like, a day in the life of Frank Provenzano is like?
Sure. I mean, the assistant general manager, you know, in my experience, is basically the director of things nobody else wants to do. I'm sort of kidding there, but, you know, my main job is helping Joe Nieuwendyk or whoever the GM is with whatever comes up and running the hockey team, both day-to-day and sort of strategically. My main responsibility, I guess you could say, is sort of managing our cap and I do all the contract negotiations and then, you know, I do any salary arbitrations that come up, and I do the scheduling in terms of our schedule and our preseason schedule, and make sure all the budgets are in line. So it sounds fairly financial, and in some ways it is. But mm-hmm. In order to do the financial, there's a lot of hockey involved as well in terms of making player decisions, because you're basically attaching value. Or assigning a value to an expected player performance. And if you mess that up, which I've done many times, you know, it does impact your hockey club.
You know, you talk about numbers and value. You were in attendance at this year's Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. How big of a role do advanced statistics and analytical methods play in the NHL now, and what do you see for them in the future?
You know, it's sort of the buzzword right now is analytics, and it is a tool, definitely, because the way I look at it, it's my job and it's our job as a management group to make decisions on players 1 year too early instead of 1 year too late, particularly in the salary cap, because essentially they're almost like stocks to me, and you have the player's value, which is his expected performance, and you have their cost, which is either their cap cost or their financial cost or both if it's the same. And so using analytics is a tool in terms of assessing what kind of performance you're going to get, but it's not the only tool, because these are human beings, and there's a lot that goes into human performance that is not captured by analytics. But I think that's where the challenge is for some of these stats, and kind of what's exciting about it is that, you know, when do players' careers typically start to take a downturn, and what is that sort of inflection point where the value and the cost start to sort of diverge, and you have to get on the right side of it. If that makes any sense.
It does, Frank. I guess it's interesting, too. You know, say some people will say that a forward's top performance will be from the ages of, say, 23 through 26, yet you obviously have to take a personal analysis of that. Say if the player is in tremendous shape and takes great care of their body. You know, for example, like a Jerome McGinley, who seems to never really show his age. You mentioned the balancing act, and how big of a role, I guess, do the scouts play in that balancing act when you're trying to put together all that information?
Well, the scouts are critical. I mean, they fill in, you know, they fill in a lot of the blanks that the statistical analysis can't fill in. In fact, the analytics are a tool to what the to the scouts' work product. They are sort of the eyes and ears of your organization. I mean, I'm focused on our team, and it's impossible for me to focus on every other team, you know, and have a knowledge base that if I tried to do that, it would detract from what I know about our own team. And the scouts really are critical to the decision-making process in terms of what you're bringing in. We're making decisions in terms of our own players and what maybe we're sending out, but they are the people that are the main decision-makers, really, or the key people involved in the decision on who to bring in. And that's where the analytics comes in, sort of almost on the back end, to support or challenge their recommendations.
Frank, we wanted to talk to you about specifically the Dallas market, the Dallas, Texas market, and how difficult it is to compete in that market. You know, we've seen the Texas Rangers have gone to the World Series a couple times. The Mavericks have obviously won an NBA championship. And, you know, Dallas is known as Cowboy Country. What's it like for the Dallas Stars competing in that market?
I mean, it's, you know, it's challenging in the sense that it's a great sports market, and it's shown that with the Stars. But the challenge there, it's crowded, and you have to win. You know, you talked about the Texas Rangers, and right now it's very difficult to get a ticket, and that's because they're winning. And it definitely is a market that will, you know, I think it's the fifth largest market in the United States. The demographics are excellent. The economy there relative to the rest of the country is very good. But you have to win, and that's the challenge. And it's a quote-unquote non-traditional hockey market, but it has shown in the past that, you know, it supports the Stars, certainly, in the fairly recent past. And, you know, we just have to, you know, we went through 3 years of bankruptcy, or two and a half years, or whatever that was. And you look around the league, whether it's Ottawa or Buffalo, you know, even traditional hockey markets, when you go through that, it has a negative impact on your market.
Frank, how big of a role has the ownership, you know, finally solidifying, how big of a role has that played in terms of the team's, you know, vision moving forward now, and how, I guess, a little bit of better foundation, and obviously you guys have brought in some people on the business side of things. It seems like the organization is on the up and up, really.
It has a huge role. I mean, you have someone at the end of the day who provides stability and vision and for the franchise. And it's at the end of the day, it's really difficult for a franchise to succeed. I think almost, to be quite honestly, impossible for a franchise to succeed if you don't have that. You know, look at the team in Winnipeg there. They have a committed owner with a vision for that franchise. And part of the reason it ended up there is because the franchise struggled in Atlanta with the ownership issues for a long time. So it's a critical piece of the puzzle.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Frank Provenzano, assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, you guys gave out contracts this offseason to two, well, one for sure, future Hall of Famer in Jaromir Jagr, but maybe of more interest has been a kind of a guy who's flown under the radar for the majority of his career and has had a great career in Ray Whitney. He spoke this offseason about how getting the second year from you guys was very important to him in terms of signing the deal. How comfortable, or what made you comfortable to give Ray Whitney that second year in that contract?
Well, you know, when we started this conversation, we talked about sort of making bets on performance. And you look at Ray's recent history. I mean, he was 13th in the league last year in scoring. He keeps himself in excellent shape. And he is, you know, I guess you could say an outlier in terms of the typical age versus performance kind of line. But we were comfortable based on the, you know, the background work we did both on him as a person and as a, you know, obviously as a player. And he's going to help our team both on the ice and off. So we were comfortable doing it, obviously, because we did.
Frank, another move that the Stars organization obviously made was acquiring Derek Roy. Was there ever any thought to filing a grievance regarding the Derek Roy deal, basically due to his injury?
No. I mean, that was basically just a difference of medical opinion. And, you know, we reviewed the medical records prior to the trade, as did Buffalo on the players we sent there. And one of the reasons we brought him in right away to have our doctor look at him was because, you know, we knew there was a medical issue there that he played with. And it was the opinion of our doctor that he could continue to play with it. It's just it's better that to fix it now because it's probably going to bother him even while he's playing. And so we made that decision along with the player. And the player, you know, Derek was, if he had said, look, I'm fine playing with this and I'll continue to play with it, that was fine too. So, you know, I think that a lot more was made of that than it actually was there because of, you know, because we traded for the player. And obviously a week later he's getting surgery, which, you know, raised a bunch of, I guess, flags in the media. But we had made that, we had had that internal discussion when he got here.
Another move the Stars made this offseason was acquiring Cody Eakin. You know, being from Winnipeg, we're pretty familiar with him here. What are your expectations for Cody Eakin this season?
Well, you know, we've made an active choice to, I think, acquire as many Winnipeggers as possible. we've got Cody, we've got Ryan Garbutt.
That's right.
And we have Scott Glennie. And then I think actually Aaron Rome's from Brandon, I believe. So we're loading up on Manitoba-based players because I hadn't been to Winnipeg in 15 years, and when I went to the game last year, was the experience in the arena there was awesome. So I thought, well, let's just get all the people we can from Winnipeg. But, you know, there's an opportunity for Cody here. One of the areas organizationally that we don't have a lot of depth in over the last couple of years and now is at center, particularly with young centers, and he is one. And that's one of the reasons we gave up Mike Ribeiro, who's an established top six center, to get Cody in there. Certainly there's, you know, we like the assets that he has. He's obviously a young developing player, but there's a lot of opportunity for him with our big team.
Frank, final question. You talk about, you know, valuing players and signing contracts. Obviously, you play a big role in the contract negotiations there, and you talked about scouting earlier. One of your scouts' greatest finds was the fifth round in 2007 draft, 129th overall, in Jamie Benn. How are negotiations coming along with Jamie right now?
I mean, they're ongoing. I think he's in a situation that is not uncommon with a lot of the sort of similar situations around the league with those types of players, and that's the restricted free agents coming out of their entry-level contracts. The only players that seem to be unsigned as of right now are those players, whether it's O'Reilly in Colorado or Evander there in Winnipeg and some of the defensemen around the league. So it's ongoing. You know, hopefully we'll arrive at our mutual level of dissatisfaction prior to... training camp.
Frank, thanks very much for joining us today. Really appreciate your insight. It gives our listeners a different perspective on what actually goes on in a National Hockey League team. Thanks very much, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
No problem, and if I could just add one thing, I wish Don Baisley all the best.
Absolutely. We will definitely echo that sentiment. Frank Provenzano, Assistant General Manager of the Dallas Stars. We're back after these messages. Bush X or Bush?
I think in Canada they were Bush X.
No, but then they went back to Bush. They dropped the X because the other band that was called Bush, I guess,
changed their name to Bush X.
So I think they just broke up.
Was Glycerine your favorite song, or?
This is a great album, by the way, 16 Stone, one of the great albums of the mid-90s.
Wasn't the lead singer of Bush married to one of the Spice Girls?
Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
Gavin Rossdale.
She's not a Spice Girl, though.
Who was married to a Spice Girl? Oh, David Beckham.
Isn't he still married to a Spice Girl?
Probably.
Hope you enjoyed our last segment with Frank Provenzano, Assistant General Manager of the Dallas Stars. He was terrific, really. Great
insight. Frank was really good, yeah.
Before we start this segment... This particular segment is sponsored by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtime, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Michael, Ezra, a lot of talk this week has been centered around Shane Doan.
Right.
I don't know why. I do know why to a point. But the Shane Doan sweepstakes need to be, to me, taken... a little bit of a step back and put into perspective. I mean, there are rumors, and his agent has at least confirmed now his agent, so take it for what it's worth, has said there is a four-year, $28 million a year offer.
Yep.
$7 million per year. 28 total. Offer on the table for Shane Doan. So I guess the first question is, why the heck hasn't he taken that offer? And the second question is, where do you think he's going?
Okay. And, you know, I really like Shane Doan. Obviously, he played his rookie year in Winnipeg, and he's only played with one franchise. And if you look at how the Phoenix Coyotes have done in the last few years, they won the Pacific Division last year. Shane Doan has been the leader of that team yep. forever. And you take Shane Doan off of the Coyotes, they're not making the playoffs, in my opinion. He was the MVP of that team.
Every time we say that, though, this team somehow surprises us, right?
Right. But Shane Doan is a talented scorer. He's a big guy. He's physical. He's underrated for, actually, his ability to get under people's skin. A great physical player. A lot of teams want him. You know, we've heard Vancouver, we've heard L.A., we've heard the Rangers, we've heard Philly, and we know that he's already met with a few of those teams, yeah. Vancouver and I believe L.A., two teams, maybe Philly, throw in Philly.
Can you get a ranch in Manhattan?
That's right.
You have to, like, buy a portion of Central Park and then convert it to a ranch.
I think,
like,
Shane Doan's dad still lives here, doesn't he?
Does he? You have to make it.
Shane Doan has some family here. I think
he's got family here.
Yeah. But, you know, Shane Doan is
not signing here, though.
No, he's not. Shane Doan is a good player. I really like him, but back to, you know, this contract offer and, you know, who might have offered it. I have a feeling that, you know, right now the front runner, in my opinion, would be the LA Kings.
Well, they said there's three teams, but then Barry Trotz says that they're one of the teams, so nobody really knows who.
Right, and then
are.
We've heard Carolina might be interested, even though I don't know how Carolina is going to afford five guys making, you know, $4 or $5 million plus. But, you know, in my opinion, we talked about this when we were on the air last, which was 2 weeks ago. A team like the Vancouver Canucks, in my opinion, would be a tremendous fit. Now, whether or not Shane Doan
totally agree.
Wants to go there over L.A. or New York. New York, we're hearing, you know, there was an article in New York Daily News that the Rangers really want Shane Doan to give them the secondary scoring, to give them the leadership yeah. that they lack a little bit. But I would have to think that on a team like the L.A. Kings, and, you know, he's got the familiarity with Mike Richards and Jeff Carter from the Olympics, Mike Richards specifically, you know, would be another good fit. But I would have to think that, you know, those...
From the... Was he in the Olympic
pardon
team?
Me, World Cup.
World Cup, yeah.
The
Richards wasn't on there, I don't think. Any event. It's to be able to play with those players. But as yeah. I think, to me, it sounds like it's between possibly Vancouver and New York. I mean, we don't really know.
Right.
To me, he fits in really well in both places. I mean, he's a guy who fits in well because he's a good... You know, Shane Doan is a good second-line right winger. Obviously, he can play first line if you want him to.
Yep.
Good second-line right winger. He doesn't skate like he used to,
nope.
but he's still rugged. He's really responsible defensively now. For some wingers, that's not as important as for others. Depends on the system that they're playing in. But he can get you 25 goals and 50 points. He can play a solid game. He can add you a lot of intangibles in
yep.
terms of his leadership ability. So this certainly brings a lot to the table. The money being tossed around, I think, is a little bit... it's classic supply and demand.
Right. And
you know, there's very little supply out there.
It might be a little bit high. And I'll let Reem get in here really quickly, but I want to say, I mean, the reason why this is in the news so much is because there's so much uncertainty swirling around whether, you know, Greg Jamieson is going to buy the Coyotes or not. And
we're talking about that later.
Who's paying attention to that? I know people in Winnipeg lost interest in that 2 years ago. So there's obviously that. But, I mean, the reality is Shane Doan, he would love to stay in Phoenix. He spent aside from 1 year in Winnipeg, he spent his entire career in Phoenix. He wants to stay there. But it doesn't look good, let's be honest. And the reality is he's not going to a non-winner. He's going
right.
to go to a team like a Vancouver and L.A. or Rangers. He's
Philly,
going to a good
San
team.
Jose also
he's,
in the mix.
He's not going to a team that's rebuilding right now. It's just not going to happen.
Look, two news stories in hockey that, you know, wake me up when they're over are the Coyotes situation and the CBA negotiations. But, you know, we talk about Doan, you know, supply and demand. There's an article on Deadspin from a few weeks ago.
Okay.
A list of every NHL team not yet linked to Shane Doan. So they list Devils, Panthers, Blue Jackets, Flames, Wild, and Ducks have not been linked. Now the rest of the league, they have links for every team that's really, you know, related to him. But obviously he's, you know, 35. I think that paying, you know, a lot of money for a guy who's, you know, on the down end of his career.
For sure.
But he's going to end up with a team, you know, who's got a good shot at the Stanley Cup. So, you know, Pittsburgh, Vancouver, L.A., Philly.
I guess we transition right there from a team that has a good chance at the Stanley Cup to a player who's never actually played in the playoffs, and that's Jay Bouwmeester.
It's unbelievable.
Calgary Flames have signed Dennis Wiedemann earlier this offseason. They overpaid him.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Richie. Okay. The fact that people are talking about Jay Bouwmeester being expendable because they signed Dennis Weidman is laughable. Jay Bouwmeester is he's in almost every aspect except maybe the power play of the game is better than Dennis Weidman. Jay Bouwmeester, I mean, I've liked this guy since he came into the NHL with the Florida Panthers. He's unreal. And he, you know, he struggled. He, you know, everyone thought he was going to be, the, you know, whatever, the next Bobby Orr, the next Scott Niedermeyer. It hasn't happened, but he's still an excellent defenseman. Extremely, extremely talented. And the fact that people are saying that he's expendable now is ridiculous. The fact is, Richie, that it's known right now that the St. Louis Blues, the Detroit Red Wings, and the Philadelphia Flyers desperately want Jay Bouwmeester. Now that Shea Weber's gone, Jay Bouwmeester has emerged as the next best guy available.
For sure.
And that... that should tell the Calgary Flames that they should keep him.
You know, it's a good point, Izzy. And I know he makes a lot of money. He's at 6.68 for the next 2 years.
Yep.
But let me just ask you this. If you're a Calgary Flames fan, obviously they don't love him. I mean, his offensive ability isn't great, but he doesn't get injured. He can skate. He can play 25 to 30 minutes a game. He can play solid. Nothing amazing.
Jay Bouwmeester's not the reason why they've struggled the last few years. It's their lack of secondary scoring.
That's
Jay Bouwmeester, sure, he hasn't played well. But to think that, you know, Jay Bouwmeester is should be traded because he's not good. People that say he's not a good hockey player don't know anything about hockey. He's fantastic.
My question about if you're a Flames fan, you look at the defense right now. So you have Jay Bouwmeester and Dennis Weidman and then Mark Giordano. That's your best three defensemen. So who's filling in the four slot? You know, Anton Babchuk. He's more of a third-pairing guy who plays power play.
Yep.
Corey Sarich is no more than a third-pairing guy. I realize both of those guys shoot right-handed, and they might be kind of fighting for that same third. They can't be fighting for it, though, because they're both under guaranteed contracts. Corey Sarich is a poor puck mover, not a great skater. He's a shot blocker, kind of penalty-killing guy. You have Chris Butler, you have Derek Smith, you have TJ Brody, you have guys like that. My question is, and are you going to elevate a young player? The question is this. They don't even have four top four defensemen on their team. So why are they talking about trading Jay Bouwmeester? That's my question.
And he's their best defenseman. Mark Giordano, I like, but he's not their best defenseman.
You could argue that one. I like Mark Giordano.
Look, maybe it's a situation where they're dangling him out there saying, hey, we don't like this guy, maybe trying to get him, you know, motivated a little. But I think the fact is, this year the Flames are going for it. They signed Yuri Hudler. Yep. You know, they signed Roman Cervenka out of KHL. I
mean, Weidman.
Who knows? And they signed Dennis Weidman. So, yeah, why would they trade their number one defenseman? It really doesn't make sense. Maybe they want to see, you know, what they could get. Maybe you could get a nice haul like L.A. got for, or Columbus. No, sorry, not Columbus. Like Philly got in their trades last season.
But the truth of the matter is, Michael, like if you're trading him to a team that really needs defensemen, whether it be St. Louis wanting another guy, Detroit definitely wanting to replace Lidstrom, or Philly wanting to replace Pronger and Mezeros and Carl, lots of guys to replace in Philly, they're not going to trade you back defensemen.
Exactly.
If they need a defenseman.
And if you're not getting a defenseman back, I don't see why you're making that trade.
I agree. And at the end of the day, you don't want to trade from a strength to create a weakness. It doesn't really make sense. So, I mean, we don't know if he's actually on the market. We've heard rumors for a while. Teams are certainly interested. So I bet you calls have been made. But I guess time will tell whether or not Jay Bouwmeester will finish this contract that he was signed to by Daryl Sutter in Calgary. 1 hour down, boys. We're going overseas next to talk to Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey. He is in the Czech Republic covering the much-heralded Ivan Hlinka tournament. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.